Mark, you have children in Ely, and how old are they?
My son is 9 and my daughter's 5.
How often do you talk to them electronically?
Monday, Wednesday, Friday, I do dinner time with them via video chat. And then Tuesdays and Thursdays, I do their bedtime stories. And so that bedtime story starts at 12:10 Mountain Time. So yeah, it's all locked into the calendar.
How does that experience of being off to boarding school kind of shape your whole idea of your relationship with your own kids, especially since you spend so much time away from them?
Yeah, well, I kind of marvel at the fact that I didn't turn out to be a complete loony. Yeah.
And how often do you get back to the UK to see them?
Yeah, I'm back and forth a bit. I do spend most of my time in the US, but nearly half my time in the UK as well.
And how good are you at sleeping on planes?
Terrible at sleeping on planes, actually. I try to do some homework.
Right. Well, I'm right there with you. And why has Denver become your base of operations?
Good question. Well, first of all, we really like Denver. I mean, what's not to like? Joel and I are into skiing. Not that that's why we choose a place, but it's just a nice place. So we're a global company. We have offices in the UK, Hong Kong, Philippines. We operate in Germany as well. But US is our core market, with over 82% of our business. We looked at California. We looked at Seattle. So we looked at the West, basically, because that lends itself well to the time zones. I previously lived in California myself. Brilliant people, brilliant place, but very expensive. Seattle was a little bit too wet. Reminded me too much of English weather. And Denver just seemed like a really good place. It was kind of, pulsating on the map when we looked at it, and it just kind of stuck out, sort of saying, come look at us. It's got Boulder. There's a tech community here. But ultimately, what we're really looking for is a place where you get a lot of highly skilled, capable professionals that are really sort of leading in services, et cetera. But also, we're really going for teams that will have a low churn rate. We much prefer teams that will last, and because we really want to invest in people. And what we do has a big tech stack. It has a large knowledge base, and so retaining that is critical for us over a period of time.
And how long does it take you to adjust to the altitude?
I'm a fairly hardy traveler. I rack up a lot of miles. I do a lot of jet lag, and I pride myself on always just soldiering through. But then the first time I visited, the jet lag, plus I was a bit sick at the time, and then the altitude was kind of a bit of a triple sandwich for me. So it's not great, the altitude, but I'm adapting.
I think it's clear as well. Lots of people move to Denver to start a family. It's a great place to raise kids, to bring up a family. And we're obviously a very family-oriented business as well. There was a real natural affinity there for us as well.
And I love that part of your story, to see that this entire endeavor was based upon the need for families to be together in a way that doesn't necessarily involve social media and third-party platforms and photographs becoming the property of the people whom you're using to send those images. I know the opinions of using these third-party platforms have changed a lot over the years, and so this definitely fits a niche, which explains to me why it's become so popular. Let's talk about the inspiration to do it. I mean, you're entrepreneurs, and you saw a need for families to be together. So how did this go from becoming an idea to becoming a prototype?
So first of all, John and I have quite different backgrounds, and I think that it's lent us both well, and it helps us both bring a lot to the table. So I graduated business school, but actually sort of the arts are really sort of my passion. And so the moment I graduated, I went off and worked in the film industry. And so rather than getting paid loads at a bank, I went and worked for nothing, right at the bottom of the rung, running around making coffees and doing whatever it took to get my foot in the door, so to speak.
Like
Years
a production
later,
assistant or just a basic gopher went around and doing whatever needed to be done at the time?
yeah, started off as a runner. So in America, yeah, they called them a production assistant. But it was fantastic. I loved it. Hard work, but absolutely brilliant. And then, I made my way up the ranks, so to speak. And then I worked on film crews, so assistant director work. And then I pivoted into production. By the end of it, I was production managing. And my last film was with Fox Studios, so 20th Century Fox. We were doing a very large film. And I kind of got to that point where I I wasn't really involved in films that I liked, and I was finding it harder and harder to participate in productions that I really liked, and I really liked the creative drive. So I was on the lookout for something else. At that time, there was this, there'd been over the past few years, a huge explosion in digital. You know, everything suddenly was digital, MP3, MP4, digital cameras. It went on and on. And of course, there was the iconic iPod and iTunes. I kind of devoured the whole business concept of the iPod and the iTunes, where, yes, the iPod was fantastic. You could suddenly fit all your music in your pocket, but really the business behind it was iTunes. At the same time, there was an explosion in e-commerce. Amazon was kicking off. eBay was doing amazing things. Also, what was critical was that that there was a lot of changes going on in terms of software and contract manufacturing in China, et cetera. And what all that meant was that you could go from sort of needing tens and tens of millions of dollars, lots and lots of expertise, lots and lots of people in order to get one device onto a retail shelf. Instead, now you could make something for not too much money, assemble the tech stack using a lot of off-the-shelf SDKs, etc., and get something direct to the customer via e-commerce. So I managed to scrape together $10,000 off credit cards and managed to get my sort of first, I think it was 30 units of digital photo frames out to Amazon, sold them and made a nice profit, and so kept going. Now, why digital photo frames? So I scoured the market. I spent my nights selling other people's products on Amazon, on eBay, trying to learn the unit economics, trying to understand how do these markets really, really work. And what I discovered immediately was that, you know, it's not really about the device. Like I was saying before, the iPod's interesting. It's fantastic, but it was really about iTunes. And so it's really about a distribution method for content. The challenge with film, TV, music is that the copyright is owned by a corporation. And if you're trying to start out and you don't know what you're doing, you're not going to get deals with corporations. And even if you did, you always stand the chance of getting cut out later. And Steve Jobs demonstrated to everyone what a few quick moves around content could do to a market to disrupt it. So but I loved the idea of your photos, your videos, because they are yours. You own the copyright. So what I did was the digital photo frame seemed logical. I also did my homework on the competition. Yes, there were big boys there, Sony, Samsung, etc., but they just weren't doing anything good. And I was not the first in. I would say I was the last in. And the reason I was the last in was because I was trying to do my homework and make sure that I had a good business model and a model with various milestones, gateways through which I thought I needed to pass in order to keep growing the business. But at the beginning, it was challenging in that everyone was getting out of the market. And this was back in the day where you had SD cards, USB sticks. So everyone was getting out. And I remember a friend sort of, he managed to dig out some chart showing this awful decline in frame sales. And he said, why would you get into a market like that? You've clearly lost your mind. And I said, no, that's the wrong chart. You need to look at this chart. And I held up a chart of digital photos that were newly being created. And there was an explosion in digital photos, obviously, at that time, but actually mainly because the iPhone had been released. So I was like, look, digital photos are going to become a real problem for people in terms of being able to manage them, et cetera. And also, there's no easy way to share and enjoy them.
Scrolling in your phone only goes so far. I hear you.
Yeah, and it's good. That's good, and it's good for being in the moment. But at the same time, that's not the best way to enjoy them. And also, at the end of the day, you've got to think about what are photos and what are videos. To me, I believe that, you know, it's just a medium by which we're capturing moments, and it gives us the ability to share that moment, a feeling, an event, and sharing that with people you love. So that's really what the business needed to be built around. And so at the beginning, yeah, I could get a few frames on a shelf and they were selling well, but ultimately it needed to be a software play, a cloud play. And at that time, A, I didn't know really what I was doing, didn't know enough. B, didn't have the right level of funding to have the right team. This was a few years after the 08 crash. And so that was a terrible time to be trying to raise money. England is also at that time, or the UK didn't have a startup culture. People didn't really invest in someone unless they kind of already been doing something for a long, long time. And so I did manage to eventually get a very close friend of mine from school to lend me money, and he later eventually invested. So he really helped, Charlie Church. But what I did was I decided to not do software until the business had demonstrated certain unit economics. And that was key, because you needed to be able to charge enough money in order to build the services, build the cloud, handle storage. And also there's a whole bunch of tech talent challenges whereby internet bandwidth at that time just wasn't adequate for sending around files. Yes, you could do it, but it was slow, it was expensive. Plus, it was very obvious that file sizes were only going to get bigger very quickly. So I waited and planned it out, slowly put together a team just using retained profits. And then when the time was right, later on we released, we built out. I think it took us about nearly 2 years to build out the infrastructure, and then we released Nixplay.
And speaking of quixotic attempts to stop the inexorable passage of time, you are listening to the successfully funded podcast brought to you by KiwiTech, a growing ecosystem of entrepreneurs, investors, mentors, accelerators, incubators, and corporations. We help early and growth stage startups build viable products, drive traction, raise capital, and scale their businesses. Now, before we move on with the big show, a brief disclaimer. KiwiTech is not acting as a broker, dealer, or investment advisor, and is not registered with the Securities and Exchange Commission in any such capacities. At no time does KiwiTech provide investment advice, endorsement, analysis, or recommendations with respect to securities. Information contained herein should be viewed for entertainment purposes only. KiwiTech does not verify or assure that information provided by any issuer offering its securities is accurate or complete, or that the valuation of such securities is appropriate. Investing in securities, particularly in securities issued by startup companies, involves substantial risk, and investors should be able to bear the loss of their entire investment. Those are the greatest hits. As longtime fans of the podcast know, you can get the full disclaimer on our website, successfullyfundedpodcast.com/disclaimer. Now, enough of that, because we're here to talk about two principles of Nixplay, created by families for families as a way to stay privately connected wherever they may be. We all long to be in touch with our loved ones, and 3 million users later, Nixplay has become the number one selling digital photo frame because of their focus on design, functionality, security, and sustainability. And we are talking with the CEO, Mark Palfreeman, and the COO, Joel Durbridge, who moved to Denver for the skiing. Welcome, guys. How are you?
Great, Doug. Thank you very much for having us on.
I'm fascinated already because you have a film background. You have a curiosity that led you back toward being an entrepreneur after you went to business school, Mark. So we've talked about how this was basically you saw an opportunity for file sharing and the opportunities in digital in general, digital transfer of files, which is a constantly evolving science. And that as the technology improves, as the files become more efficiently transferred, Nixplay strikes me as a really interesting play going forward, just because of the way it can evolve with the times and help connect us in ways that other ways are starting to fail us. So when you talk about Nixplay and its functionality, what did you design Nixplay to do, and how does it stand out among the big market for helping people share pictures long distance?
First of all, it's really about keeping families together and helping families share moments as they happen. So it's very quick, and it has to be very quick and easy to use. And also, you know, relive memories and share those memories and celebrate events, etc. So we're really about families sort of celebrating one another. Distance is a key. I actually went to boarding school for about 10 years in England. And so I was separated for long periods from my brother and my sister and my
that
parents.
I'm sure was also very formative.
Yeah, and I'm very fortunate. So I've got a wonderful family. I'm old enough where it was pre-email. So we would sit down, write letters, and then, you know, weeks later, you'd get a letter back. There was one telephone at the school. I think it was harder to get at that phone than probably a prison phone. So it was old school.
And, all right, but you were in prison for a while. You weren't in boarding school. This is the euphemism. Okay.
The key ingredients are that it has to be super easy to use. Take my mum, for example. She just wants tech to work, but she doesn't really want to spend time on it. So she sort of demanded of me that the frame would just turn on when she walked in the room, turn off when she left. So we have to have the technology at that high bar of design whereby it, for example, knows when you're in the room, turns on, knows when you're not in the room, turns off. At the same time, it needs to still be controlled. It still needs content. So I do that via my mobile app. So do my siblings, so does my wife. And then you've got a whole network through the whole family. It is complex to build because you've got mobile phones, you've got people sending photos by email, you've got our web app, and then you've got the frame. So it really is a platform and an ecosystem of devices, different types of software, et cetera, running different things. So there's a lot of complexity, but ultimately for the customer, it just needs to be seamless and simple.
Now you answered my next question because I have parents in their 80s. We just bought them an iPhone because they wanted to stay closer to their grandchildren and their children. And we're all on our phones and they withstood smartphones as long as they could. But the functionality dealing with, I mean, I'm a digital immigrant, my children are not. But when you get people of a certain age who benefit most from this technology, you really need to bend over backwards to make it as user-friendly as possible. So I'm really psyched to hear that you have that functionality that makes it so people who are perhaps less familiar with tech, with manipulating apps and uploading files and file sharing, that they don't need that level of expertise in order to enjoy this.
Yeah, absolutely. And it goes beyond even just the technology. It also goes to like a core foundational principle of ours, which is around privacy and security. So if you want a family to adopt your service, there's always going to be someone who, you know, is at the end of the spectrum of being wanting everything hyper secure, hyper private. And so we have to accommodate that. And also, it's just something we believe in. I'm not a big fan of having my content shared by other platforms or monetized by other platforms. It's my content. It's my family's content. So I want it to stay private. So we architect that from the ground up. It's a big deal. We're certified by third parties around privacy. So that's core to it as well.
That's a huge part of it. And any opportunity you have to assure your users, your subscribers, that their very personal property is secure, I assume that would be an enormous benefit.
Absolutely. And the certification bit's actually important. So not that anybody does read their user terms and conditions for the services they use, but the thing is, even if you are satisfied with the conditions you have and you sign off on it, they can be changed at any time by the company. And so you need to rely on third parties as well to be able to sort of make sure that they're certifying you as well. And if you're not meeting certain standards, they can pull it. I mean, there are some real horror stories out there. So at the risk of sort of scaring people, but you know, not all digital photo frame services are equal. There are a lot of the sort of what we call in inverted commas, like the no-name brands out of the Far East, let's just say. So we don't find that acceptable. And so everything's encrypted on US servers.
To what extent, as CEO, as the chief communicator of this product, and as someone who is fighting the considerable headwind of people in general who feel very averse to uploading anything personal into a transfer portal of any kind, how do you reassure them? I mean, I know, for example, I am setting the record now for email spam. I'm getting text spam now. And it's had this horrible effect of separating people because we don't pick up our phones anymore. We get suspicious of any kind of communication, if we're being marketed to, if we're being phished, if we're being scammed. Clearly, your product is a way to protect against that, but it also is meant to build some level of optimism, wouldn't you think?
Yes, it does. And so it's a multifaceted sort of challenge, let's just say. But I think one of the key things is we always start with adoption. In this day and age, everything's, you know, you already, like you said, you're using so many things. There's a lot of noise out there in terms of you just pick up your phone. Gosh, there's so many apps and there's so many alerts. So first of all, we don't necessarily try and force everyone to use everything Knicks players, so to speak. If you're already using...
That's just smart, know, because you're just, you know, drinking a fire hose. You got to learn a whole new UX and it's difficult.
Exactly. So we try to be complementary where we can. So for example, if you're using Google Photos and you're happy with Google Photos, we plug into Google Photos. We're one of the only firms in the world that have Google Photos integrated into our app. So stuff comes in, but it doesn't go back out. And that's key, so that we will integrate with other parties, services that you're already using, you're comfortable with. It is a challenge, but you know, as long as we're consistent in our messaging and consistent in our methodology and what we do, then, you know, the message gets out.
And do you find yourself, when you're addressing a customer base, maybe they've been using Google Photos and thinking, I really don't want to use that anymore because my pictures might be stored on a barge in San Francisco Bay. Do you find there are customers who just say, please take my photos off of Google Photos and let's work with NixPlay exclusively?
Yep. So we've got an app and you can just upload straight from your camera roll. So, and also the web app allows you to sort of just drag and drop huge quantities in. So very, very easy with the NixPlay app. And the NixPlay app is designed specifically for sort of ease of use.
You've been in business now since 2013, is that correct?
Actually, yeah, it was December 2013. Yes, that's correct. And I remember I thought our hair was on fire, sort of shipping out our first few thousand units.
Now you're 10 years into this almost. So if you were to predict back in 2013, speaking of your hair being on fire, and you look at where you are now, what do you think is most surprising about how NixPlay has worked out, and where do you think the next 10 years could take you?
The thing that has been most surprising, and I'm gonna be a bit annoying here, not answer your question directly. It's been less about NixPlay actually, and it's been about the world. Because often, you know, the key about business is just trying to stay ahead or sometimes keep up. The world has been the thing that's been the hardest to predict. It started off with sort of, you know, tariffs kicking in. That changed the game a bit on hardware. There are things that have been good for the business. There's been things that have been bad for the business, a challenge, I should say. But ultimately, I think that our DNA and our mission, our vision has just kind of kept us true. We've been going for a while for a big reason, because we were bootstrapped at the beginning. And that also makes us, I think, a very different proposition to many of the companies that are crowdfunding, because we've demonstrated profitability. We're not pre-revenue. You know, we've posted some big numbers. Yeah, I think it's brought us sort of to the public awareness as a much more mature, robust, thoughtful company.
I'm sure. When you first began to seek out crowdfunding as a way to advance the business, what was that process like? And how would you describe your first experience with the first round?
It's been a really interesting journey. And I can go back a few years where we came quite close to listing on the London stock market several years ago. And then, if everyone recalls, sort of at the tail end of COVID, the markets dropped out. We took a step back. A few friends mentioned crowdfunding to me. I was aware of it, but I'd never really looked at it. And I have to admit, I was very dismissive. I kind of thought it was like a glorified Kickstarter. Eventually, I got round to doing some research and I was like, okay, this is a real thing. I did more and more research, learned about the Jobs Act, and then eventually started reaching out to people in crowdfunding, such as Ryan Fate at Seed Invest, et cetera, who was one of the lead platforms. And I was like, wow, this is really interesting. And I looked at the case studies as well. So there are companies, you know, I just wanted to make sure, is there a path for companies to achieve an IPO, for example, or multiple raises? And more companies have been proving this. More and more money has been coming into crowdfunding. I believe it doubled from 250 million to half a billion by the end of 2021. Most importantly, you know, it is regulated. I think that it's run very responsibly. And so we thought this was really, really interesting.
What's great about crowdfunding is it gives access for early stage investments to the regular consumer in a regulated and safe way for that consumer. And now NixPlay has over 3 million users as well who enjoy our product on a daily basis. And so being able to also bring that audience towards a crowdfund, people who are using our product, who have thoroughly enjoyed it. And now we can give them the opportunity to both benefit in the upside of the company, as well as actually benefiting in the upside of the product as well. I think it's a unique offering for companies which have that kind of network effect that we have.
Yeah, when the product itself is selling well and receiving good reviews, that does a lot of heavy lifting in your marketing, because as we're trying to rise above the noise, word of mouth is still one of the best ways. And I know that's why people go into influencing and in general, just trying to receive news from people you trust, people whose opinions you've listened to before and recognize. Yeah, when you have a client base like you have, that's got to be a huge asset going forward. So when you talk about your experience in crowdfunding, And Mark, I love your answer, by the way, about how it's less about the company and more about the world, because there are so many trends and so many individual patterns that we're seeing that could not have been on, you know, you couldn't have foreseen back in 2013. So if people are listening to this and wondering whether to get in, I think people obsess a lot about timing and aren't quite sure, like, is this the right time? Is that the right time? And I've always been the one who says, you really can't predict what's going to happen. So just get in, you know, put your canoe in the water and see where it takes you. How would you assess the role of timing in your company's ascent as far as the financial trends that you've seen?
I'm a firm believer that timing is nearly everything. So the reason why it's fantastic timing for Nixplay and why we're opening up right now is that the company is has been going through a huge transformation where we've gone from primarily hardware revenues and transitioning to a company that's getting recurring SaaS because we're building out our services now, our marketplace, etc. You want to buy into a company in terms of value. You want to buy in before the transformation. Yes, there's always some risk, but the point is, right now, the company is primarily valued on a multiple based on hardware revenue, which has a much lower multiple. By the time, as we transition into services, and we're now into seven figures in recurring revenue, the multiple is many, many times higher for SaaS companies. So we're making that transition. So the value play really is before we finish making that transition, so to speak.
How does that revenue break down in terms of how customers subscribe to your product?
Currently, the majority is still hardware. So you're probably talking about, sort of like 90% hardware in terms of revenue. Now, how that breaks down on a per customer level is actually fascinating. So yes, there's hardware upfront and we make profit from that. And there's two tiers for subscription. So there's Nixplay Plus and Nixplay Lite. The key thing, though, is that what we're really building out, what's our North Star, our services around your content and around your experiences. So we've built out an ecosystem. People often just, you know, they see the frame, that's what they think of Nixplay, but that's actually only a fraction of what all the manpower goes to. We mainly do software. And so Nixplay Plus gets you things like 80% off prints. We're partnered with Fujifilm. And so we're really trying to upend several business models around services using the frame as an anchor in the home.
Clearly, your focus is on expanding the services aspect, partnerships, and again, trying to build your stature in this industry where a lot of people are trying to compete with you. So how do you see this expanding? How do you see your services expanding a bit to become more robust for your subscribers?
So first of all, in terms of competition within our space, we're very different. I don't like to say one brand's better than the other or something. It's a very different proposition. Most other frames are very sort of single purpose. You know, upload photos to a frame. That's fine, that's great, but that's not what Nixplay is about. For example, where we change is that, again, it's around services and we're building that out. In terms of just software services, you know, we've got features that other people don't have. For example, you can name beneficiaries so that you can pass on your content to family members, etc. So we're thinking multi-generational. We've got our first marketplace partner, which is Fujifilm. We're not too fussed about making money off the prints. Our business model's really around subscriptions. It's, you know, it's a win-win situation, huge win for the customer. Fuji get paid, and our shareholders win by having a recurring revenue stream rather than a discrete payment. The print industry in the US alone is over $4 billion. It's still growing, but it's full of old school competitors who haven't really innovated in about 10 years. They've all tried to get subscription models, but all of them have failed. Nixplay is competitive in this, in that we're further upstream. We're in the home. We have a frame. We're on your phone. We've got the content and there's data. So we're far ahead of the competition in terms of being upstream. And that's what we really want to push forward with.
And is there some specific IP associated with that that distinguishes you from the crowd?
Yeah, there's quite a lot. It's a huge IP stack. I believe we've got it's about eight patents and counting. But really, it's about the sum of all the parts. There's no one single patent that sort of wins the race, so to speak. It's really about the sum of the entire ecosystem stack.
When the time comes, I don't even know if you're thinking about exit at this point, but you are clearly thinking about competitors who haven't innovated. So what is your interest in recognizing that another big name in either file sharing or technology or photography who hasn't innovated would see you as a potential acquisition. Does that appeal to you?
Yes, it appeals to us because there's definitely value in scale. And I'm one of those people, I don't believe in trying to do everything, and I don't believe in always trying to take the hardest path. If there's someone you can partner up with who can accelerate everything and ultimately, therefore, deliver a better solution for your customers and to a wider audience, that's a win.
And I see Joel nodding as chief operations officer. I'm sure he has an opinion on this. First of all, how long have you been with the company, Joel? And how has your experience been in the NixPlay C-suite?
So I've been with the company for over 2 years now. I think on the face of it, when I was first introduced to the business, I was just unaware, I think, of the scale at which it was operating at. And then really once I sat down and spoke with Mark, I understood the scale, you know, the number of countries that we're operating in, the number of users that we have, the time that our frames are on. You know, a frame is on for roughly about 8 hours a day in the homes. We display 1.5 billion or over 1.5 billion photos and videos every single day. So really understanding the size of the opportunity, understanding how important we are and impactful we are in people's lives, it was a really big deal to me. What I would say, you were talking about product earlier, I think one thing that became very apparent early on, which I hadn't really thought about when I first joined, is NixPlay is really it's a version of private social media. You know, the user is not the product. Like, we provide you with a product and a service that is a way to display and share your moments and memories with the people that you care about. And I think as we now see a backlash against social media, as people become more and more concerned about privacy, I think you're naturally seeing users switch to products like NixPlay, where we put your privacy first, we put you as the customer first, and really what we care about is making you happy and making your family happy. So for me, my background was in the British military. I then got into finance. So now being in a company where truly our mission is to make people happy, that's an absolute joy for me.
I love the stories that you guys have. And how did you connect with each other? And how has that relationship progressed?
Well, actually, we both met in Hong Kong, but I'll let Joel tell the story.
Correct, we did. Yeah, so I actually was referred to NixPlay through a recruiter, but I was actually in a CrossFit gym in Hong Kong, just finished a workout with a friend. He'd actually been approached by this recruiter, but it turned out he wasn't qualified for the role. So he suggested to me that I should apply for it. And again, I was kind of like, oh, what do they do? He's like, oh, it sells digital photo frames. And again, it sort of made me think kind of, okay, well, you know, what does that actually mean? What is the size of this opportunity? But as I said, when I sat down and spoke with Mark, you realize it's so much more. It's this huge family network, which brings meaning to people's lives every single day. And for me, that's a much more exciting opportunity.
When you think about your 2 years there, what have you learned? What's been the most surprising thing you've learned about this company? And where do you think it can go as someone who joined in when the company had already reached a level of maturity?
The most surprising thing I've learned about the company, again, for me, would be the sort of the usage. I think how the emotional stories, and I don't want to steal this thunder from Mark, but the emotional stories that we get from our customers in terms of how it impacts their lives are the things that have definitely sort of surprised me and really become the things that matter most to me now. And so even if I take my own family into account, my wife's grandmother, she's literally living by a NixPlay clock at the moment because she sets her frame to automatically turn off at a certain time. So she knows in the living room, once the frame turns off and stops showing photos, that's time for her to go to bed. And it's great because, you know, we obviously use the frame to send her photos all the time. And so she's constantly messaging us, thanking us for the photos. And it's a very passive, but sort of continuously ambient way to include those people in your lives when unfortunately you can't be there every single day.
It's amazing, isn't it? It's astonishing to think about. You talk about trends that you can't anticipate. And we underestimate perhaps the therapeutic nature of family connection. And I think that is more at the forefront of all of our minds now than it was 5 years ago for so many reasons. And so, again, timing is everything, as Mark says. And I do believe that to have this company reach this level at this time is extraordinarily fortuitous. What are your goals for the next 24 months in terms of how you'd like to expand your SaaS functionality, how you'd like to expand your subscriber base? What have you mapped out for yourself in the near future?
So definitely we want to accelerate services. We want to accelerate partnerships. We really want to bring more and more value to being a NixPlay member. We want to move the customer experience from being a frame owner to being a NixPlay member. So we really want to work more closely for our customers, with our customers, to deliver them more services around their content throughout the year, and it not just be a Christmas gift. And so the frame will move from being sort of the center of our business model over to just being a part of the whole ecosystem. And so really it's about building that ecosystem. And then just a little bit further on from that, and you alluded to this, is that at the moment it's very much focused around sort of grandparents, parents, grandchildren, but there are lots of other segments, lots of other use cases, you name it, weddings. My two best friends who are in England, you know, we have our own little private network as well. So there's a lot of different use cases, a lot of different segments. So we really want to grow into that as well. So there's a lot of growth and a lot to do for us.
We pay close attention to technology trends, how people are using and treating their content. And so an area that we are cautiously looking at is NFTs. And now I appreciate very recently, I think there has been a faddy nature to it for sure. And I don't think NixPlay is going to be the place where people buy and sell expensive monkey pictures. But absolutely, we do see NFT technology verging towards people's personal content and really impacting how content ownership affects the individual. And so NixPlay will be paying close attention to that and working out the best way to deliver that experience to our customers. I think that will start just through verifying NFTs and being able to display them on the frames. But then really, as that technology builds out, I see many, many opportunities in terms of, could you use the frame to follow your favorite NFT artist, for example? Or as musicians adopt NFTs, could we use the frame to enable either personalized or specific content to be sent to someone? A great example of this would be what's known as POAPs, that's Proof of Attendance Protocol. They're basically looking at tokenizing concert tickets. Let's say I'm a huge Adele fan. I've been to 5 Adele concerts and I have the NFTs that prove that. Do I then start, or do I have an access to now either personalized or unique content from Adele recording her next album that's going to go straight to my frame? I'm not saying that is something that we are planning to deliver, but what I'm saying is that we're paying very, very close attention to these technologies and working out how NixPlay can be a core part in that.
Well, I look forward to the opportunity for Adele to listen to this and one day become your chief spokesperson and elevate you to the stratosphere of the file picture sharing universe.
I'm sure she'll be chuffed to know that I was talking about her.
Yes. You get the impression she's a pretty down-to-earth person. When her life expands, you know, when she starts a family, who knows? So we've talked a lot about what you've achieved in the last 10 years, and there's a lot going on in the future. So as we wind down here, let's talk a bit about how potential investors can stay in touch with what NixPlay is doing, how those plans are coming to fruition, how the investments are progressing, how to contact you with any questions they have.
So right now, we're still in the process of getting our final approvals for the fundraise. So when people are listening to this, they can go to Start Engine and find our profile through there and invest that way. If they do have any questions on the fundraise, I'm very, very happy to take direct questions. If you are interested in investing in our business, you absolutely have my time. Dare I say it, but you can email me at joel.durbridge@nixplay.com. And you can happily reach out to our customer service team, who will then direct you straight to me, and I will get in touch with you personally to answer any questions.
We're very sort of publicly accessible, LinkedIn, everything. And Joel and I, and actually all the senior leadership in the company, you know, we're in daily contact with our regular customers anyway. So our customers never shy away from reaching out to us directly if there's something they need or they want, and we always reply. It's actually in our DNA. One of the great things about e-commerce is that it allows you to get as close to the customer as you can possibly get, unlike traditional old school retail. And so I know myself, I personally, at the beginning, I think for the first three, four years, one of our founding partners, Peter and myself, we answered every single customer service email ourselves. So we've literally answered tens of thousands of inbound questions, complaints, recommendations, et cetera. And so that's just been inculcated in our company. It's like no one's allowed to sort of sit behind a wall. Everyone is on the other side of the wall with our customers, listening, talking all the time.
And none of those emails has been written by AI.
No, that's correct. But we do our best to make sure that our customers are happy and that we're meeting their needs. We don't always get it right. It's unfortunately it's impossible to. But I would always encourage people, you know, reach out because if you do have issues or you do have problems, we want to solve it and we're here to help.
Yeah, this whole, as a writer, the whole idea of ChatGPT just makes me want to just walk into the ocean.
Well, I was going to say, I've got a slightly contrarian view, I think, on crowdfunding. And again, I caveat this with the fact that I'm fairly new to this, but I think there's an irony around all of this in that I think that if you are a genuine startup business, and just, you know, I'm looking at this through the lens of the business, not the platform. If you're very inexperienced, et cetera, but you've got a really good idea, I think that a VC could be a good play because VCs can support you. They can help you. The reason why it works so well for Nixplay, though, is that we know what we're doing. We've built a really, really solid team. We've gone through our painful lessons. We will still make some mistakes, but the point is we have made a lot of mistakes. We have assembled our board, our advisors. We have very supportive shareholders already. But the point is we've done a lot. And so we're very confident about the proposition we bring to the table because we're a bit more mature. And because of that maturity, you know, the audited accounts, the years of track record, you know, we've sold over a third of $1 billion worth of sales. It's easier for, I think, investors to make a much better informed decision. It's a very, very heavy burden on a brand new startup company to bring shareholders along the journey. It's a lot of work. And for Nixplay, crowdfunding right now makes a lot of sense. I wouldn't have recommended it to myself 10 years ago.
Well, Mark and Joel, it's been great talking to you about Nixplay. That's nixplay.com, which is where you can find all the information. And there is a link there as well to the investment options. Gentlemen, it's been great to have you on the program, and I wish you all the best with Nixplay going forward. I think it's serving a very important therapeutic purpose right now, and it seems like the right product for its time.
Doug, thank you very much. It's been awesome, and thanks for having us on.
My pleasure, guys. So once again, that has been CEO Mark Palfreeman and COO Joel Durbridge of Nixplay. I've been your host, Doug French, and we'll be back next time for another discussion about people trying to make the world a little smaller and families a little stronger. Bye-bye.